All right. Yes, you did.
You mentioned that if you have a strong enough IV, it could push past the compound.
Kiss that up to the gods of stats. That's what we're hoping. Yes.
Is there a way to measure the strength of our IV?
Yes. If we have the data, we'll be able to do effect size analyses to see how powerful the confound is and use that as a decision for how desperately we want to control it. I can tell you that in stuff I'm doing right now that very expensive decisions are going to be made on, I know I have problems, I know what they are, and I have a shot at cleaning up the data because I've got measures on the stuff I'm afraid of. If you can't control it, you're going to measure it and model it. Right now, we're emphasizing control because the first layers of statistics we're going to do are bivariate statistics. They're only going to look at two variables at a time. That's enough problems without having confounds in there. Okay, so right now, we're focusing on trying to do clean and to notice how clean something is. We'll work on lots of strategies for cleaning things up statistically and procedurally once we get this down. But awesome. We play a game of representation and inference. Our intent is that the members of the groups, the conditions, the treatments, whatever we call them, represent populations. Because our hypotheses, our theories, our notions, our concern is with populations. We have to play the sampling game because we can't have the whole population. If nothing else, we can't have the whole population over time and space. Don't forget, sampling is people, setting, task, stimulus, and when the whole damn thing happened. That's what we call sampling, not just people in a pile. So our intent is to compare an untreated and a treated population. Especially when we're talking about treatment, it's not uncommon that there is no treated population because we just made up the treatment. Oh, shit. How are we going to compare something we don't have? We're going to go make some. That's the manipulation part of representation. The sampling part of representation is go grab. The measurement part of representation is go measure. The manipulative part is make them. So what are we going to do? We're going to start by participant selection. Population part of external validity gives us a participant pool. After we do selection, we're going to do assignment. Assignment is designed to give us initial equivalence. Notice at this point, all we've done is gather and split. Everybody's still gray because everybody still represents the untreated population. If we made a comparison now on any variable we pick, we would expect to retain the null because there's no difference on average between the groups. That's initial equivalence. That's what we're trying to get out of random assignment. Then we take the not-to-be-treated group, don't treat them, and they are the control group that represents the untreated population. We didn't do a thing with them. We can't have done anything with them because we harvested them. Isn't that an awful word? We harvested them as members of the untreated population, and then we're trying to keep them members of the untreated population. So everything we do to them has to be as benign as possible. Then we take the to-be-treated group, and voila, we turn them into the treated group, and it is our intent that that group of people, as a direct consequence of our manipulation, now represents a population. That's representation and inference. Those are the steps, those are the processes. There's a lot of hand-waving that goes on here. Within groups, true experiment. Same problem. Same initial step, go find some folks. Now, this is within groups. Everybody's going to get both conditions. There is still random assignment, but it's random assignment to condition order instead of to condition. And so we take, I don't know what that was. So we take half of the participants, leave them untreated, and now they're still representing the untreated group. Then we treat them. And voila, they are representing the treated group. I say voila, like I say poof, just to draw attention to the fact of what we're assuming we can do with the lives and behaviors and DV scores of people. Now we have a problem. Because if the treated group performs differently than the untreated group, we don't know if it's because of the treatment or because it's the second time through. That we're going to try and fix with counterbalancing. Because the other half of the subjects are going to be first treated into the treatment group, and now we intend them to represent the treated population, and then, hold your breath, we untreat them. There's some skepticism in the room. Nicely done. And now they represent the untreated population. Now, if we have successfully untreated them, if we've successfully untreated them, half of the untreated people were untreated first and second, so order is counterbalanced, and half of the treated people were treated first and second, and that is counterbalanced. Counterbalancing only works when the treatment is sufficiently acute or adorable. Nothing. I can't have that one on this Friday morning. Fine. We really are counting on this ability to untreat. And obviously some things can't be untreated. And fewer things can be untreated than we think. One of the real problems with this is that within groups designs are more efficient. We get more data from somebody if we run them through all the conditions of the study. And as we'll see in the next unit, within condition treatments of data are typically more statistically powerful. We like power. We like powerful analyses. They're more likely to reject the null. And typically our research hypotheses anticipate differences. So we are really counting on being able to untreat that. Yes?
Can you give an example of like
Sure. Let's say that I am treating you for a toothache. My wife's a dentist. And I'm going to try two different analgesics to take the pain away. All right? The one lasts for 30 minutes and is then flushed out of the system. The other one lasts about 24 hours. I'm going to counterbalance. I'm going to give you one shot, wait 2 hours, see how you're doing. Well, give you one shot, wait 30 minutes, see how you're doing. Hour and a half at gap time, give you the other shot, wait half an hour, see how you're doing. Now, if I run the one that only lasts for 30 minutes, I can run the one after it, and you're who you were at the beginning of that one, same as here. But in the other order, you've got two drugs on board. Okay? That's the easiest example. And again, you got to know the industry standards, your community standards, for what you can unpoof. Some things unpoof better than others. Yes? Probably, or it might be two different things. We'll talk more about the notion of control, but the control group is whatever group gives you the comparison you want. So if it's to another drug, you can think of that as two treatment conditions, or if one of them is the standard treatment, you might call that a control. Just labels. The point is, we've got two groups with only one difference between them, the drug. Yeah. But you haven't yet caught the seduction of the within groups design. Yeah, everybody gives you data in every condition. And we kind of think we can unpoof stuff. Because a lot of what we're doing, especially in vignette research, if you read just one vignette, oh man, I bring you in. I spend hours getting you in the door, debriefed, get the stuff, and I get 10 minutes of data. I could have gotten 40 minutes of data in all of the conditions. But can I bounce you around amongst those conditions successfully unpoofing you from the conditions you've already been in? And we'll tell some stories when we talk about those designs.
Another thing that about within groups that's really cool is all of the unseens about that individual.
Yep.
Are held constant. They are their own counterfactual. Granted, there's something.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yep. It's just there is a seductiveness to the within group design. especially if you're actively trying to study change. We'll talk more about that in a second. Yes?
Okay, I'm going back to a pink thing that drove me absolutely crazy.
Okay.
Okay, so there was one that was about, like, kids of all ages playing around the little playground.
Yep.
And we look at them, right?
Yep.
In that example, depending on the wording of the question, sometimes it was between, sometimes it was within. And so I'm trying to...
Oh, keep going. Keep going.
In a situation where, like, we were just observing, there was no... change that, like, you didn't do
anything. Didn't do a damn thing except collect the data.
Yeah.
Non-experiment. But let me try something.
All right.
So we got two conditions that we'll call birds and bees. Okay? And two different groups of people. One given the bird treatment, the other given the bee treatment. Okay? Now, we also collected data at the beginning and at the end. So I've got data four places. Then they come to the last sentence of the damn pink thing. And that tells you the comparison you made, and that tells you the design that matters. So if I said I compared the beginning and the end of the bees, that's a within design for that comparison. If I tell you I compared the end of the birds and the bees, that's a between. So that's likely to be the challenge in that question, is you have to look past how the data were collected and say, how were the data collected that were compared? Because if I do this, that's within. If I do this, that's between.
So within is not always about the treatment. It could be about the characteristics of the population.
It's the data we compare in the analysis, which had to be measured, yes. But this could be something other than beginning and end. There could be another treatment in here. And still, that's within, that's between. Does that help?
Yeah. On the same note,
nobody likes that fucking pink thing. Okay? But you will forever check what's the question when you're deciding what's the design. It's one of those transformational pains in the ass. Keep going.
Okay, one more thing. Longitudinal means over time.
Whatever we want it to mean.
Yeah.
Now, longitudinal, we're about to get to this, but longitudinal suggests long. But all it means is repeated. Mm-hmm. This could be 20 minutes. Now, if we only take beginning and end, people are likely to call it within. If I'm collecting data every 10 minutes, they're more likely to call it longitudinal. If I could fix it, I would. Nobody has made me the term czar. Not that that would be a particularly good idea. Yes, there was a hand above the shoulder and moving. All right, let's go into non-experiments. Same intent, representation and inference. Now we have a treated population. Ooh, well, how do I do that? And an untreated population. And what I go do is get some of each. No manipulation, no poofing. There's untreated people out there. Let's go get them. There's treated people out there. Let's go get some. This is a non-experiment. There's no random assignment. There's no manipulation. And this design has an external validity advantage because those experimental group people really do come from the treatment population. That's not something we poofed in the lab in 10 minutes by handing them a question or a questionnaire or a paragraph or watching a video. So non-experiments tend to have an awesome external validity advantage. But internal validity, doomed from the get-go. It's not a true experiment. We don't have random assignment manipulation. We should still look for confounds and articulate them and list them. But initial equivalence is shot. Random assignment is shot. We should still worry about ongoing equivalence, but causal interpretability is shot. All right, the within groups non-experiment. There is going to be something that happens to the whole population. This is the simplest version. So the whole population, shit's going to happen. So what we do is, while the population is still untreated, we go get some. And after the whole population is treated, we go get data from them again. Each representing and allowing us to infer. With the same basic stuff that we have awesome external validity and unbelievable challenges to internal validity.
So is that like the pre-test, post-test kind of thing?
Pre-test, post-test. Okay. Yep. Let's keep going. Because this is the simple, clear version. All right. You don't always need counterbalancing. You know, with in-groups designed to have causal interpretability. I know what I said. I have to say something first. I only tell you a total of two lies, and I take both of them back. This is the first one. I'm taking it back. The issue is that some things cannot be counterbalanced. Not because they aren't acute, but because they happened in a natural order. There are what are called seriated independent variables. They have to happen in a particular order. There's no way you can counterbalance 10 and 50 practices. Because then one group would have 10 and 50, the other would have 50 and 60. You can't lump the 10 and the 60 together and say, look, they don't represent a single population. But counterbalancing is designed to eliminate order effects. In a seriated independent variable, order is a natural part of the independent variable. 10 comes before 50. Call it whatever you want. You can't change that yet. I know you can pop them real hard in the head and hope for a little bit of retrograde amnesia, but you're going to have a hell of a time getting that through IRB. Not that I tried. So if you have a seriated independent variable where things have to happen in a particular order, you can't counterbalance, and you don't have to, because that order is part of the IV. You have to control the timing, the delivery, and the measurement of the dependent variable, and all other ongoing equivalences. How are we doing? So sometimes you can't randomly assign, and it dooms a within-group study. Sometimes you can't randomly assign, and it enhances a within-group study. That's the Big Bear version.